We're talking with Paul Hunter, poet, publisher. His latest collection of poetry is entitled Breaking Ground, about farming stories from the Midwest, basically. I'm Paul Nelson. Many of the poems in Breaking Ground were debuted at Red Sky Poetry Theater. It was nice to be able to, in a sense, reread those, although I've never read them, to hear them again, in a sense. Can you discuss why you're involved with Red Sky, maybe how you got involved with it, and the role of this particular reading in the poetry community?
Well, the Red Sky is, for those out there in the invisible world of the listener, is an open mic that welcomes everyone at any skill level. And that's always been so for the last 22, 23 years now. The thing is that, as we all know, if you take a course at a school or take a seminar from someone you respect, and it jars you out of your everyday world, and then you start writing. But what happens as soon as you get out of, as soon as the semester is done, you're back out on the street, and you're back out on the street without a without a support group, without any way to cheer yourself on. And that's why some people become kind of academic junkies in a way. They have to hang out at a school and keep taking courses, but because that gives you a peer group, gives you a family. Well, Red Sky, since the early 1980s, has been a kind of extended surrogate family for creative types that meets every Sunday night, and we hear each other out. We don't usually bring a date, because, you know, you might wind up flayed on the floor in a metaphorical sense.
I don't understand that.
Well, you know, in some ways...
I understand the part about not bringing a date.
Yeah, but
I should have taken that advice years ago. But being flayed, yeah.
Yes, rendering yourself nakedly. I mean, you read a new piece that you have never read before, that you're still working on, that is going pretty good, but may have a turn or two still to be tuned, and you step out there, and you have put your foot down on your own banana peel, and you wind up upside down on the floor, and you say, well, I guess that didn't work. You read something, and there's this deathly silence.
Not a way to impress a date is what you're
saying. No, not exactly not the way to impress a date. So it's one of those things where it may be an AA kind of meeting, a 12-step kind of meeting for people trying to quit writing too.
Yeah, like you. And you've been a failure at that,
sure,
you say.
Sure. Well, I tried. You know, you actually, reality therapy insists and rearing its ugly head, and you know, you say, well, what have I been spending my time on? Well, I've been spending my time writing this stuff. And if I can't somehow get it noticed, get it to the place where I feel satisfied and I connect, really that's what it is, connecting. You know, is how at the beginning of Howard's End, the first two words, the little epigraph that Forster has, it says, only connect. And that's one of the things that you... That's the keynote of all art, is if... I know there are people who don't believe that, but that's what I hold to. And reading it out loud, sometimes the quality of the silence, the quality of the attention of your peers is an embarrassment and a wonder. The quality that when they listen, and you can tell, because people fidget in theaters, they fidget and cough, and they want to be on to the next thing. But every now and then, the sun stops in the sky, or in the evening sky is at Red Sky, and the hands of the clock stand still, and because something real has occurred, someone has touched something that you hadn't thought of before. A new planet swims into your ken. And that's wonderful.
Bob Dylan said the purpose of art is to stop time, and that's what you're talking about.
Sure.
But, you know, you could read your work at the Seattle Slam. You could read it at a number of different open mics. And Red Sky's been going on the longest now in its 23rd season. But what sets it apart from the other readings?
Well, for one thing, because it is so overtly open to everyone. It isn't playing favorites. It's not just kids, and it's not just old people, and it's not just unpublished writers, and it's not just published writers. It's people who have an interest in and a love of this craft, and people don't come back if they don't care about it or love it. I mean, I think maybe people get embarrassed away if you know they just want to have a beer on a Sunday night and come in and bellow at a room full of people. That wears thin. It doesn't cut it.
They won't find themselves very welcome there if they do that.
No, that's the trouble.
Right. Someone said there are a lot of poetry readings, there are a lot of open mics in Seattle, but Red Sky is a poetry reading. And I think that's been the best description of Red Sky so far. You know, in the author's note at the end of Breaking Ground, you say that your parents were shy country people who had made it in the city, but you could always see past the veneer to what moved them. And that was the country, I'm assuming.
Yeah, they were shy country people, and it comes to me now as a gift. You know, I have a whole lot of, you know, there's a county in southern Indiana where I'm probably related to every other person in the county, and my sense of that world is that it's a perfect, you know, some of these poems I've written again and again in various guises for 35 years. I've written them a long time. I tried, and it's only recently that I found ways of telling some of the stories or bringing the events to light. And I feel a little sense of failure occasionally still, because, you know, you can't explain everything. And maybe you shouldn't. I mean, I found myself the other day at a reading, I read this poem about my uncle and his team of horses, and at the end I stopped and I looked at the audience and I said, you know how dangerous that is to jump down from a wagon because you've got a piece of fence wire tangled up in the hooves of the horses, and you have to tie the reins around the brake handle and jump down and pull the wire out from under their feet. If you didn't trust the horses and if they didn't trust you, you know, you could be trampled, or the wagon would be upside down, in the next county, and you'd never get it back. Or the horses, they could kill themselves.
It's a dirty business.
It is a hard and dirty business. It is. And yet it's a business you have to do with a certain amount of affection. I mean, the thing about farming that got to me, you will notice that I'm not really a farmer. You know, I garden. Right now I'm not gardening because my backyard, I found out, has too much lead from house paint in it. But up until very recently, I grew all of my own green beans and tomatoes and lots of other things, and canned a lot. But the thing about farming is you put it all in the ground. You put your affection and your care and your effort, and there's no place else for it to go. It has to go in the ground.
Everything ends up there.
Everything goes in the ground, and then you have to stand back and await the miracle. And the miracle sometimes doesn't come, or doesn't come in time, right. Or it shortchanges you.
Right, right, right. Or you have to sell it for less than you wanted to.
Right, right.
Page 53, talking about the dirty business, there's a poem called Manure.
It's
real dirty business. Would you care to read that one?
I don't know.
Went through the book recently in preparation for the interview. Thanks for sending the copy. Reviewed in the New York Times, among other places. And Paul Hunter is the poet. Breaking Ground is the collection. Page 53, I believe, is what it is.
Yeah, I was working alongside an old tenant farmer, Bill Ward. And this is one of the first tasks he put me to, manure. That summer, spread 100 tons myself on top of the 100 with him digging alongside, through all 5 barns around the patchwork place, built up underfoot to where the cows hit their heads on the rafters, and he said it was that or raise rabbits or saw off their damn legs. So we chipped away every spare minute. Perfect job for a greenhorn, chewing apart, levering, muscling up this pungent cake, part bedding straw, part feed. Some bog, some ferment, some dry rot, some with mushrooms poking out, fragrant a foot down as a rare old cheese, aged to a solid ripe fundament. New earth surprising every bite with the squirming pink fingers of a handful of baby rats. A green horse collar or swingle tree, a sleepy black snake full of lumps, coal scuttle, harness buckle, blue patent medicine bottle, stash of a secret drinker in the muck. All to be loaded and broadcast on stubble fields and turned under with no way of doing it not right. So first I took a silage fork and went in for a bigger bite, maybe pumped to get it over in a day, but slowed when I saw how little a dent we made by sundown, and next day went back to the pitchfork. And Bill would lean, admire my swing, and call me a natural. Said I might get to be kind of a what you call connoisseur, get so I could tell all the different flavors and what they'd been eating. And took me around to sample one corner where some years before hogs had been penned, another where some ewes had wintered once and lambed, stalls where they'd kept a span of mules or horses, he couldn't be positive, and naturally the chickens everywhere they could roost or scratch or brood. Why, you get so you even miss the smell and can't get to sleep nights without a fresh pile for a pillow. And he was right. Pretty quick I got to know the thin, flaccid pancakes of cattle, the sheep's ripe plums, the pig's gold smear and dribble, chicken's salt and pepper candle drippings, the geese great cake decorations, and horse blue-black chunks of evil. So we would back the spreader in, this long, narrow hearse on iron wheels that had once been horse-drawn, that had a chain-driven feeder and 3 wicked whirling sets of blades. And when we had it mounded up to where it couldn't take another bite, he'd let me fire up the tractor and go tearing off down the field, racing the wind, flies, aroma in top gear at 12 miles an hour, spewing a brown blizzard far and wide that left me emptied out, sky high and satisfied.
Spewing a brown blizzard, I think, was key line to that. And you know, there's something about being a natural at spreading shit that's almost a prerequisite for being a poet, huh?
Yes. Well, the great power of being able at 15 years old to drive a tractor, it was fast and it was cheery to be able to empty it all out.
12 miles an hour just racing down the farm. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And which means you can't even stay ahead of a fly.
Right. Yeah. Of course, it was a slower time. I guess that's part of what's being said in this book. It was a slower time. It was a time in which the suburbs didn't quite go as far, and well, there's more to that.